Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nedarim is Lamed Vav. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learners Eichner Shmuliba Gabriela Bashmuel. We're in the very bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Beis. The Gemara started a question, which just reintroduce ourselves to, and that is that when the Kohanim do the Avoda, so who are they acting on behalf of? They are representation, and they're representing whom? So the two options are either they're representing the owners of the animal, meaning that the owners of the animal are providing the animal, but they can't do the Avoda, so they give it over to the Kohen, but the Kohen is acting on their behalf. Or the other possibility is that the Kohanim are acting on is a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the question of the Gemara. The Gemara says, "My nafkamina." Okay, good. It's a nice question. It sounds nice, but practically speaking, what difference would it make? So the Gemara says, "I'll tell you what difference would it make. The difference would be in the world of Nedarim. Let's say that this particular Kohen and this particular owner of the animal are not on the best of terms, and there was a neder that was made, so that now this Kohen cannot provide hana for this person through a neder." Classic scenario of a neder. So the owner of the animal is the madir. He's the one who made the neder. The kohen is the mudar. He's the one who's prohibited to give hana to the owner of the animal. So under such circumstances, so now can this kohen be given the animal and do the avoda? So if you hold that he's the shliach of the baal, if he's the shliach of the owner, the answer is of course going to be no. Because now I'm asking you to do me a favor. I'm asking you to serve as my agent. That's hana. That's a benefit. And you can't do that. If, however, the kohen is acting as the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then it would be fine. Yes, I'm doing something, but I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for Hashem. The fact that it's your karban and I'm going to be doing it, fine, but I'm a professional. I'm doing it because that's my job. But I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for Hashem. I'm a shliach of Hashem. That is the Gemara's question that it posed. The Ron pointed out yesterday, and the Ron's going to point out again today, but I'll mention it now in the beginning, that we know the answer to the question. The answer to the question lies really in the question itself. Meaning that the Gemara says, is he acting as the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or is he acting as the shliach of the owner? He can't be acting as the shliach of the owner. The Ron says, the Gemara in Kedushin arrives at this conclusion. He can't be acting as the shliach of the owner because, think about the world of shlichus. Shlichus is that I'm going to give you my power of attorney. Meaning that the power I have, I'm investing in you. That's the general idea behind shlichus. I can only give you, as my power of attorney, the same power that I have. I can't give you something and you exceed that which I'm able to do. That's simply not the definition of shlichus. How can the owner of the animal say to the kohen, here, you're going to act as my agent? The owner of the animal, assuming he's not a kohen, can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, he can go into certain areas. Can't do the avoda. He can't do anything that the kohen is able to do. So you can't call that shlichus if the kohen has the ability to do things that the owner of the animal can't do. So we know, the Gemara's Kedushin concludes, we know that really the true agency, the true shlichus of the kohen is that he's acting on behalf of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not on behalf of the owner. So we know the answer to the question. So if we know the answer to the question, so the first half of today's daf, the next 20 minutes of Gemara that we're going to be doing together is going to be addressing this question, asking the question, and you're going to see that as we get to the end of the sugya, our Gemara is not going to arrive at a conclusion. So how come the Gemara Kedushin knows the answer and we right now don't know the answer? So the Ron says, well, really, we do know the answer, but the way the Gemara likes to operate is it likes to try to find a proof from either a Mishnah or a Braisa. So what we're going to be doing over the next 20 minutes is we're going to be quoting Mishnayos and Braisos to try to secure a correct conclusion in terms of who is he a shliach of. But the truth of the matter is we already know the answer. That is that's the Ron both in the beginning of the sugya, and the Ron repeats himself at the end of the sugya as well. One of the proofs that could have been brought as a proof was our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah told us that, let's say we have a scenario where the Kohen is the Mudar, he's the one who cannot give benefit to the owner of the Karban. So our Mishnah says he can offer the Karbanos. So it sounds like from our Mishnah a pretty good proof. But the Gemara deflected our Mishnah because if you look carefully back at our Mishnah, you'll notice that our Mishnah gave very specific examples. The Mishnah says, I'm going to reread the Mishnah, I'm looking at the Mishnah on Laman Hamad Beis, Umakriv Alav, Kine Zavim, Kine Zavos, Kine Yolados, Chatos Vashamos. Those last two words, Chatos Vashamos, for the time being, ignore those last two words. In just a moment, I'm going to come back and we're going to revisit those last two words. But aside from Chatas V'Asha, mentioned in the Mishnah, Zav, Zava, Yoledis, what are those? What do they have in common? They're what's called Mechusrei Kapara. Meaning these are Kaparas that are brought very specific scenarios in which allows the person both entrance into the base of Mikdash and the ability to eat Kaparas. In other words, they didn't do anything wrong. She gave birth to a baby. She's fine. The only problem is that after having given birth to a baby, she can't eat a carbon. And the next time she'll be able to eat a carbon is only after she brings her carbon yoledus, only the carbonus of her having given birth. There's no chait, there's no sin involved. It's just simply a technicality. So, and the same thing is true with Zav and Zava, right? A man who has a discharge, a woman who has a discharge, not a menstrual discharge, but a Zava discharge. So once again, they are just simply precluded from eating a carbon until they bring their specific carbonos. This is what's called Mechusrei Kapara. So when the Gemara noted, and we saw this yesterday, that our Mishnah speaks to these specific examples in terms of what a Kohen can bring on behalf of somebody that he's not allowed to provide hanah for. Why are these karbanos different? So the Gemara yesterday said, because these karbanos don't require das. When I bring a karban on behalf of somebody else, generally speaking, you need das. You need the mindset. Over here in these karbanos do not require das. Take a look at the Gemara. Let's pick it up in the middle of the Amud. So, and we're going to see this again inside. I know we saw this yesterday, but just to get us back on track. Ela mechusrei kapara. So I'm reading in the Gemara Lamed Hamad Beis. We're right in the middle of the Amud. And I'm starting, last two words in the line is halfway down. Ela mechusrei kapara shani. The Gemara says, mechusrei kapara, these are the examples given in our Mishnah, it's different. The Amar of Yochanan, the Gemara says, and I'll give you, I'll explain to you why it's different. We have, as a statement of Yochanan, hakol tzrichim das, every time you bring a carbon, you need das. Well, of course, when we say every time, we know there are exceptions, because there's an exception to every rule. So, hakol tzrichim das, chutz mi mechusrei kapara. And the exception is going to be mechusrei kapara, meaning the karbanos of a zav, a zava, a yoledes, and by the way, mitzora. Our Mishnah doesn't mention mitzora. I'll come back to that point in a moment, but these are examples of mechusrei kapara. And Rav Yochanan says, and I'll prove to you that they don't need das. Has the proof work? Shari adam, maybe karban abanava abanosava kitanim. Because we know that when it comes to these karbanos, a father can bring karbanos, these karbanos for their children, their minor children don't have das, and yet the father could provide the karban on behalf of their minor children. Shenemar zos toras hazav ben gadol ben katan. We know zos toras hazav, it's an inclusionary term. It means that not only can you bring this karban on behalf of you yourself, but even your children who don't have das. So you see that these examples of karbanos are mechusrei kapara. They could provide this carbon, you could bring this carbon even for someone who doesn't have das. So the Gemara says, Ela me'atel Rav Yochanan, Zostarasi, Oledes, Ben Ketanav, Uben Gedola. Gemara now is just bothered by a technical question. Again, there are four carbonos that are Mechusrei Kapara. One's a Zav, the other's a Zava, a third is the Oledes, and the fourth is a Mitzora. Now, it's possible for a minor to become either a Zav or a Zava. It's unusual, but it's possible. It's also possible for a minor to be a Mitzora, but a Yoledes, a minor giving birth, the Gemara says, we know that's just simply not so. Ketana bas yoledes, this is what the Gemara is getting stuck on right now. We know that a minor doesn't give birth. Va'atani rabbi b'kamei d'rav Nachman, shalosh nashim m'sham shos b'moch. Three women use contraception when they're married. Ketana m'beres me'neka. One of the three women is a ketana, a minor, a girl who's married. So when she's with her husband, she's going to use contraception. Ketana shem etita b'vitamos, because if she becomes pregnant, there's no way that she could sustain the pregnancy. She's just simply not physically mature enough to sustain the pregnancy. So in order to avoid any type of complication, she'll just simply use contraception. Okay. So the Gemara is just simply bothered now. So here we have an example. The argument of Rav Yochanan is that whenever you see the word Zos Toras, but when you find it by Zav, and you find it by Zav, and you find it by Mitzora, so you can bring it for the carbon for your children because you don't need Das. What about a Yoledes? Yoledes, there's no such thing as a child giving birth to a baby. So the Gemara says, Zos Toras Yoledes, Ben Pikachas, Ben Shota. So the Gemara says, okay, so as far as the Yoledes is concerned, so here we'll make another argument, which is basically going to bring us to the same point. If a husband, let's say, is married to a woman who is clinically insane, so and she needs to bring a carbon, So good. So he'll bring the carbon on her behalf. She doesn't have das. She's clinically deranged. So she's not mentally competent. She doesn't have das. And the husband brings it on her behalf. So just simply an example where you find that the husband can bring on behalf of his wife, even though she doesn't have das. She cannot da maybe carbon. The Gemara says that a man sponsors a carbon on behalf of his wife. He's responsible for the carbonas of his wife. The Tanya Rav Yehuda Omer, Ada maybe carbon asher al ishto. V'chol carbon asher chayavis. A man brings a carbon asher on behalf of his wife. What's the point of the Gemara over here? Point goes like this. We know that in the world of carbonas, there are certain occasions where the carbon that you bring is based on your economic status. In other words, there are three economic levels in the Torah. There's an asher, there's a dal, and dali dalos. Either you're wealthy, you're poor, or you're really poor. And based on your economic status, so that's the kind of carbon you bring. So when it comes to a woman, so once she's married, so her status now becomes attached to her husband. Whatever her husband is, that's what she is. So if she comes from poverty, but she marries into wealth, so the halacha is that she's going to have to bring a carbon. Actually, more accurately, her husband's going to have to bring a carbon based on now her status of being wealthy. Shekach kosev la. In fact, this is not just a, this is actually contractually obligated in the ksuva. So I'm going to obligate myself to you, and part of that obligation is that you're going to have to bring a carbon based on my economic level. Okay, so all this brought us to one singular point. I read the Gemara very quickly. All this brought us to one singular point, and that is that in the world of Mechusrei Kapar, like we just got done describing, so these are Karbanos that do not require Das. And because they do not require Das, so therefore, a parent can give on behalf of their child, a husband can give on behalf of his wife, even if his wife is clinically deranged, she's not mentally competent, he'll bring on behalf of his wife, because these Karbanos do not require Das. And bring us back now to our original point. And because these karbanas do not require das, so that means now, that's why our Mishnah chose specifically these karbanas. Our Mishnah describes a kohen who cannot give benefit to the owner of the animal because a neder was made. So the owner of the animal is the madir. The kohen himself is a mudar. He's prohibited to provide benefit to the owner. And yet the Mishnah says he can bring a karban on behalf of the owner of the animal. So right now what the Gemara is arguing is these specific karbanos, mechusrei kapara, they don't require das. I can do it on behalf of somebody else, and I don't need his intent. I don't need his consent. And so therefore this is not hana, this is not a benefit. The only time that it's a benefit is if I need his approval. If I need his approval and I can't bring the carbon without his approval, so then once given the approval and I bring the carbon on his behalf, that's hana. Our Gemara specifically chose mechusrei kapara because no das and therefore it's no hana. That's what the Gemara now is currently arguing. So what we basically said up until this point in time is that the question of when the Kohanim are they acting on behalf of the of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are they acting on behalf of the owner? No proof can be brought from our Mishnah because our Mishnah specifically chose the karbanos of mechusrei kapara. We're on the very top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. Now we continue with today's daf. Meisiv Rav Shimi Bar Abba. So the Gemara now challenges. Let's say he's a Kohen. What does that mean, he's a Kohen? Meaning the Mudar. Meaning that the... I'm sorry, not the Madir, the one who is not allowed to provide benefit for the owner of the animal. So the Braisa says so that if he's a Kohen, he could still do the Avoda on behalf of the person that he's not allowed to provide benefit for. He could sprinkle the blood of the Chatas, he could sprinkle the blood of the Asham. Period. So, what comes out now from our Gemara? Comes out pretty clear from this Braisa that the Madir, the Kohen, who's not allowed to provide benefit, can offer the Karbanos on behalf of the owner, even though he can't provide him benefit. And this Braisa talks about Chatas and Asham, seemingly standard Karbanos. Now, how can he do that? In other words, there's a neder. He, Minatari, is not allowed to provide a benefit. Ah, so the Gemara says it must be that the Kohen is acting as a representative of Hashem. So again, he's just doing his job. This is strictly professional. And this is not a question of hana. That's what the Gemara now would like to conclude from over here. Now, the Ran points out, and now we're going to come back to a point that I made a moment ago. The Ran points out that this Braisa doesn't seem to be any stronger proof than our Mishnah. Look back at our Mishnah. Let's read our Mishnah once again. On Laman Hamad Beis, the Mishnah says, Umakriv alav kinei zavim kinei zavos. Okay, that's zavim zava. And then kinei yolados, good. That's the birds that are brought by a woman who gave birth. And chataos ve'ashamos. And our Mishnah also describes chatas and asham. So why is it right now that the Gemara finds this braisa and uses this braisa as such a wonderful proof when meanwhile our Mishnah describes chatas and asham? So the Ran on this point says one of two things. Either number one, the Gemara did not have the girsa of chatas v'asham. Okay, in other words, in our Mishnah, it must be that the Mishnah only described Zav and Zava and Yoledes. That's point number one, says the Ran. Another suggestion, says the Ran, is that maybe our Mishnah did have that Girsa, but in the context of the Mishnah is pretty clear. Meaning the Mishnah says Zav, Zava, Yoledes. What's the next thing that should be mentioned in the Mishnah? Mitzora, meaning those are the four Mechusrei Kapara. So from the context of the Mishnah, it's pretty clear, even though the Mishnah doesn't use the word Mitzora, that when the Mishnah uses the words Chatzas and Asham, it's referring to Mitzora, because we know that of the Karbanos that a Mitzora brings, he has to bring a Chatzas and an Asham. So contextually, our Mishnah is clearly talking about a Mitzora, even though it doesn't say it. In the Braisa, however, the Braisa just simply says, Dam Chatas Dam Asham, without giving any context. So it's seemingly our Mishnah, the Braisa seems to be talking about the general Chatas and Asham. That right now, the Ran says, is what the Gemara, why the Mishnah is not such a good proof, but the Braisa seems to be a very good proof. Back to the Gemara. So the Gemara answers that Dam Chatas Asham Mitzara. Vidam Hashem Oshel Mitzara. So the Gemara says, even in the Braisa, it said Chatas and Asham, but what we can say is, it's specific. It's not talking about the general Chatas and Asham, it's talking about Chatas and Asham of a Mitzara. And that now means it's not a proof, because now it's talking about Mitzara, so we're back to where we started. So that's Mechusrei Kapara. By Mechusrei Kapara, you don't need Das, therefore there's no Hana, and so therefore there's no proof. Dechsiv Zos Tiyat Taras HaMitzara Bengal Ben Katan. Okay, so we know that the Mitzora offers a carbon whether he's a Gadol, whether he's a Katan, because it does not need Das. Tanan. The Gemara now quotes another Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Gittin, HaKohanim Shepiglu B'Mikdash Mezidin Chayavim. Let's say a Kohen is Mefagel. Okay, the world of Pigel in Masechta Zvachim, the Gemara spends a lot of time discussing the Isser in the Torah of Pigel. The Isser in the Torah is that if a Kohen shechs a carbon, and while shechting the carbon, he articulates that he's going to eat the carbon chutzes mano outside of its prescribed time, and then he completes the Avoda, so he violated the Isser in the Torah of what's called pigel, and the carbon is going to be disqualified. So this Kohen just disqualified a carbon based on a thought and an articulation that he's going to eat the carbon chutzes mano outside of prescribed time. Okay. Why the Kohen would do this? It's malfeasance on the part of the Kohanim. So why would he do that? It's hard to describe motivation. Maybe he's just so upset with the owner of the animal. Whatever the, however you want to explain malfeasance. But it's malfeasance on the part of the Kohen. A general question that the Gemara in Gittin addresses, and this is part of that discussion, is that if I create a hezek, damage for another person, but it's not physically evident. In other words, it's hezek she'eino nikar. I damage a person, but halachically and not physically, or I damage his property halachically and not physically, do I have to make restitution in that which I, and the damage in which I did? So fundamentally, the answer is no. The Torah only forces me to make restitution when I do physical damage to either you or to your property. That's the halach in the Torah. But the Chachamim realize that there needs to also be, we need to operate socially. So the Chachamim legislated that even if I don't do physical damage, but even if I do halachic damage, I'm still going to be on the hook and I still have to make restitution. This Kohen just ruined my carbon. This Kohen did the act of pigel. There's no physical damage. In other words, he shechted the carbon. It just now happens to be based on the halachas of pigul. He disqualified my carbon. So what the Mishnah here in Gittin is going to teach us is that under certain circumstances, that kohen's going to have to make restitution. That's the Mishnah's point. So let's see this inside. Hakohanim shepigul b'mikdash mode. I'm sorry, mizidin chayavim. So if they do it deliberately, this kohen knows full well that by articulating that he's going to eat the carbon outside his prescribed time, the carbon's going to be disqualified. If that kohen does it intentionally, so now he owes me the value of the carbon that he destroyed. That's the halacha, that's the Mishnah in Gittin. The Gemara now notes, it's pretty clear from the Mishnah, although the Mishnah doesn't say it, but it's a very simple diuk in the Mishnah, hashogigim paturim. But that means that let's say the kohen did not do it deliberately. It was an accident. Accident meaning he didn't know the halacha. He didn't know that, let's say he shechted today, today's Monday, so by carbon shlamim, you only have 2 days to eat the carbon, so it's today and tomorrow. So let's say the kohen, while shechting it today, says, oh, I can't wait, Wednesday we're going to make a great barbecue with the meat of this animal, I'm going to eat the meat of this animal on Wednesday, not knowing that it's prohibited what he just did. Okay, it's a shogeg. So, if he did a bishogeg, so the animal's still disqualified, but he's not on the hook financially. He does not have to pay me financially. Now, I know that sounds strange, because in the world of damages, generally speaking, we do not make a distinction between mezid and shogeg. In fact, the end of the second parak of Baba Kama, the Adam Muad La'olam, we know that when it comes to damages, you're always on the hook. But again, remember what I told you in the very beginning. This is not hezek hanikar. This is not physical damage. This is halachic damages. This is a legislation created by the Chachamim. So therefore, we make a distinction between mezid and shogeg. Okay.
The restitution is not a benefit to the owner.
Well, again, right now you're conflating the two issues. Okay, you're conflating the hana and the conflating the damages that he needs to pay. You'll see. In other words, the Gemara is about to make the point in terms of how we see from here how this halacha speaks to a benefit. The Gemara is about to.
Is it providing a free service, so it wouldn't be.
It doesn't. In other words, when it comes to, he's providing a service. Now he's not charging. Now, granted, he's not charging, but still, because whenever, why would he? No, he's not. The answer is he's not. The Mishnah says he's not. He's only liable if he does it b'mezid. So the Gemara makes that distinction.
Could be that the reason that because it's a free service that is.
Yeah, but it could be. But to my knowledge, the basic reason is because fundamentally he's not liable. Meaning this is a halachic damage, it's not a physical damage. Fundamentally, it's not liable. It's only because of the Chachamim legislated that that you're on the hook for damages. They only legislated b'mezid. That's my recollection of the Gemara in Gittin. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hashogim Paturin. Elashe pigulan pigul. Now, what also comes out now is that if they do pigul b'shogeg, it works. Meaning, it's effective in that which they did. Now, they didn't intend to do pigul, but they did it. Like the example I just gave. Today's Monday, and the kohen, unbeknownst to him that the Torah prohibited it, the kohen said, I can't wait to eat this on Wednesday. Wednesday we have a big barbecue lined up. I'm going to eat the meat of this carbon on Wednesday. And not knowing that the Torah prohibited it. So the Gemara says, The Gemara says, look, if he's acting as an agent of Hashem, so then you understand that what he did is effective. But if he's acting as my agent, so we have a general rule when it comes to agency. And that is that if I appoint somebody my agent, I want him to do something that is constructive to me and not destructive. That's a general rule. So the Gemara says, "Amai pigul and pigul lema le shlicha shivisich l'tikune v'lo la'avuse." Whenever the Gemara talks about shlichas, not whenever, but very often when the Gemara talks about shlichas, you're going to hear this expression. When I appoint a Jew as my shliach, I wanted a Jew to do something that is constructive for me, not destructive. You're my agent. You, the kohen, are my agent. And you're now going to do pigul? And you're acting as my agent, I don't want you to do pigul. Now the Ron points out over here, and this is an important point. When the Mishnah talks about mezid, the Gemara wasn't bothered. Only when we're talking about shogeg, the Gemara says, well, he can't mess up my carbon, he's my agent. Why wasn't the Gemara bothered by the fact that the Mishnah says that b'mezid, the Kohen does pigol, and that's effective, and the Gemara wasn't bothered in terms of the aspect of shlichus. So the Ran explains, because if the Kohen's acting b'mezid, so clearly now the Kohen is stripping himself of his assigned agency. Meaning the Kohen at that point and says is, look, I know you asked me to offer this carbon, but you know what? I'm going rogue. I'm going to offer the carbon the way I want to on my terms. I'm going to think that we're going to eat the carbon on Wednesday. Again, I don't ask me why he's doing all this. But we're going to eat the carbon on Wednesday, meaning if it's b'mezid, if he's doing it intentionally, so clearly now he's divesting himself of that agency and he's going rogue. And that's why the Gemara wasn't bothered. But shogeg, in other words, he still, it's basically, I'd like to provide for you. It just happens to be that this Kohen is not that informed. Okay, he doesn't know the basic halachas of a karban. So this is why the Gemara is bothered by the fact of, if the Kohen's still under the umbrella of shlichus, so we know that one of the basic rules of shlichus is, you only act as my agent to help me and not to hurt me. So how can pigel ever be effective by shogeg if the Kohen is acting as an agent of the owner? The Gemara says, aha, exactly. He's not acting as an agent of the owner. He's acting as an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the Gemara's conclusion. That seems to be the Gemara's conclusion in terms of what we learn from here. So the Gemara says, Amishani gabi pigel, damakar lo yichashev lo mikol makom. The Gemara says, not a proof. We could still argue that he's acting as an agent of the owner, not an agent of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this is an exception to the rule. The Torah says, lo yechashev lo, that despite the fact that he's serving as an agent, and despite the fact that generally in the world of agency, you only act constructively, not destructively, pigul is an exception to the rule. The Torah says so. Okay. So once again, at this juncture in time, we have no proof. Two dots signifies what? This is the end of the Gemara's discussion. So again, just to reiterate now, to recap, the Gemara's question is, when Kohen is acting as an agent, they're acting as an agent of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, acting as an agent of the owner of the animal. The Gemara over here asks the question, brings out a number of Mishnayos and a number of Braisos, and the Gemara leaves us inconclusive. Again, the Ran points out, the Gemara in Kedushin says that they act as an agent of Hashem, not as an agent of the owner, for the reason that we expressed in the very beginning of this year today. Why over here the Gemara asks a question and doesn't resolve it? So the Ran said, because the purpose of the Gemara over here was to try to find a definitive proof from either a Mishnah or a Braisa, and the Gemara just simply says it was unsuccessful in doing so. Okay, Gufa. I'm Rav Yochanan. I call Srichem Das Chutz Mimchusa Kapar Sheri Adam Evi Karban Albanova Albanosava Katanim. Okay, we're going to go back to a statement that was made by Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says that in the world of Mechusa Kapara, again, four people bring a karban for no other purpose than just simply to be able to go back into the base of Mikdash and eat karban again. A Zava Zava, man or woman who has a discharge. I'm simplifying, by the way. It's specific. The discharge has to be specific, and it also has to be a zav gadol and a zav gadol. Anyway, a zava or a zava, a yoledes, a woman who has just given birth, and a mitzora. So these four people, for no fault of their own, just simply need to bring a karban in order to allow entrance back into the Beis HaMikdash and eat karbanos once again. They are called mechusrei kapara. And yes, I know that by the mitzora, I say it's no fault of his own, meaning he got saras for a reason. Okay, but nevertheless, these are the four examples of mechusrei kapara. Rav Yochanan says in all these cases you don't need das, and Rav Yochanan says then the proof that you don't need das, because in all four of these examples you can bring it on behalf of children. Although the Gemara earlier this morning pointed out that that's not true by Yoledes, but okay. But the proof is that because they can be given on behalf of children, so therefore they don't need das. This is a proof that Rav Yochanan offers that in general these karbanos don't need das. Elamiata Yavi Adam Chatas Chelav Al Chaver Shekin Adam Evi Al Ishto Shota Kerav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, really. So now let's talk about Chatas Chelav. Okay, you've been around long enough, you know. The Gemara, whenever the Gemara says the words Chatas Chelav, it just simply means a generic carbon Chatas. Chalev is a prime example because we all have chalev in our house, although that statement does not really true today. Chalev is the forbidden fats of an animal. Anyone who eats the forbidden fats of an animal is subject to an iser kares. If that fat is consumed b'shogeg, so you have to bring a carbon chatas, and it's just the most popular reason why a person would bring a carbon chatas. So that's why it's always referred to as chatas chalev. It just simply means a generic chatas. Let's make the following argument. If I have to bring a chatas chalev for my wife, who is mentally incompetent, so can that now provide an argument that I can, that any person can bring a carbon chatas for any other person, and you don't need das? So Allah ma'amar v'laz, v'hifrish chatas chalev v'chaver lo asa klum. And meanwhile, we know that's not the halacha. The halacha is that I can't bring a chatas on behalf of somebody else without their express consent that I'm allowed to do that. In other words, you do need the das of the owner. But why? Can't we make the argument that since I can bring on behalf of my mentally incompetent wife, so therefore anyone can bring on behalf of somebody who doesn't have das? So the Gemara says, ishto shota hechidam. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why the argument is fundamentally flawed. Because a man who's married to a woman who's mentally incompetent is never going to have to bring a carbon chatas on her behalf. Think about it. The Gemara says, let's go through. Because if she ate the chalev while she was in a state of mental incompetence, there's no liability. You're right. A person is only liable for an act that he did while he was mentally incompetent. If he did it while he was, he or she, in this case she, is mentally incompetent, so there's no liability. And v'ida achla kishi pikachas v'nishtata ha'am rav yirmi, ha'am rabbi abal, ha'am rabbi yochanan, achla chalev v'yifrish carbon v'nishtata. And the Gemara points out, okay, so let's even entertain the following scenario. The woman ate the chalev while she was mentally competent, and then a carbon was set aside for her. Then she becomes mentally incompetent, and then it was a temporary moment of insanity, or a couple of days, or a couple of weeks of insanity, and then she snaps back to the point of mental competence. The carbon that was set aside for her is going to be disqualified. This is a principle known throughout the Gemara as dichui, because there was a moment in time where the carbon was ineffective or disqualified. So therefore, once disqualified, always disqualified. This is a principle known as dichui. So simply put, there's never a case where a husband is going to be bringing a carbon chatas for his wife who ate chalev, because technically speaking, it just simply is not going to, no case is going to exist. So Gemara says, scratch that. Meaning, there is no case study where a man is going to be bringing a chatas, a generic chatas on behalf of somebody else. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have no proof from there. The Gemara says, okay, but how about this? Carbon Pesach. We all know that annually, well, as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash, so we have to bring a carbon chatas. Sorry. Carbon Pesach. And this carbon Pesach that we bring is not only on behalf of us, but on behalf of everyone in our family, including our kids, including our minor kids. They're also going to go to Yerushalayim with us, and they're also going to be eating carbon Pesach together with us. And our minor kids don't have das. And meanwhile, the carbon Pesach that we offer on behalf of our minor kids is effective. It's fine. So can't we now deduce, based on the Rav Yochanan argument, that there's a scenario where I'm bringing Karm Pesach on behalf of my kids, so therefore I can bring Karm Pesach on behalf of anybody, and I don't need their consent. And meanwhile, Amar Rav Elazar, the Gemara says, here's a statement that is going to contradict that. Hifrish Pesach al chaver lo asa klum. Meanwhile, we know that if I offer Karm Pesach on behalf of somebody else, and I don't have their consent, nothing. It's not good. So the Gemara says, so how come? I mean, why not? If I can bring Karban Pesach on behalf of my children who don't have das, so seemingly using the Rav Yochanan argument, I can bring the Karban Pesach on behalf of somebody else without consent. So the Gemara says, Amma Rebbe Zera, Sela Beis Avos, Lavda Araisa. This idea that my kids are going to come in tow together with me, And they're going to eat the Karban Pesach, that's not a din d'oraisa. Okay, now here it gets interesting. Right? Now, by the way, the expression the Gemara uses is Selaves Avot. That's a pasuk in Chumash, right? Bar Mitzvah Parsha, that's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, that's Parsha's Bo. Selaves Avot means that every father brings a Karban Pesach on behalf of his children. But the Torah doesn't say children. It just simply says Selaves Avot. It means Karban per household. But the truth of the matter is, the Gemara is telling us, is that your children are not min Torah commanded to eat the Karban Pesach. Now, it's not perfectly clear from the Gemara what exactly the exclusion is from the children. The Ran over here writes, you can see it inside, the Ran is second wide line down. The Ran writes that we know what's not Minat Torah, the registration. We know that for a Karban Pesach, in order for anybody to eat Karban Pesach, they have to first register for a Karban Pesach. Okay, this is what's called minui. So, what the Ran writes over here is that the children don't have to register. There's still a mitzvah for a minor to eat Karban Pesach. There's just simply no mitzvah in the Torah for them to have to register for Karban Pesach. That's the way the Ran understands our Gemara over here. The Tosfos throughout Shas says, no. You know what children are excluded from? They're excluded from the mitzvah of eating Karban Pesach. Meaning, a child does not need to even min haTorah eat the Karban Pesach. That's how Tosfos understands the exclusion of children from the Karban Pesach. In a moment, we're going to see that children do eat Karban Pesach. So then it only begs the question. If min haTorah they're excluded from Karban Pesach, so by what right do they have to eat Karban Pesach? According to the Ran, the question never gets off the ground. Because the Ran says that the only exclusion for a child is registration. They don't have to register. They could just eat, but they don't have to register. But according to Tosfos, the exclusion of a minor from Karban Pesach is both on registration and on eating. So then the question begs, if that's true, then how can a child, a minor, eat Karban Pesach? So Tosfos in Pesachim, very interesting. Tosfos in Pesachim says that chinuch, meaning we know there's a mitzvah of chinuch. So we know that they're going to grow up and we know that they're going to eat Karban Pesach as they become an adult. So to train them in the mitzvos, so therefore that will justify us giving them Karban Pesach, even though min haTorah they don't have a mitzvah to eat Karban Pesach. Okay, very, very interesting Tosfos. Peches in Pesachim. Tosfos in Peches. It's not the Gemara again. It's the Gemara just simply says they're excluded from Selaves Avos. So from the Gemara itself, it's not perfectly clear what they're being excluded from. Okay. Unclear. I mean, the Ran just simply says it, but it's not clear. Okay. So umi ma'amin did not. I'm sorry. Celebrates avos lav derais. Umi ma'amin did not. The Gemara says, and I'll show you that this is in fact so, because Omer levan of hareini shochet es haPesach amishiyalemi kemrishon leYerushalayim. So the Mishnah over here, it's such a beautiful Mishnah. It describes a father, you know, basically getting his children excited about the mitzvahs. So he says, let's have a race from here to Yerushalayim, and the first one who gets to Yerushalayim is going to receive a portion in the karban. So the first one who gets there not only receives a portion, but is also able to be mezakeh to others as well. So the Gemara says, now if Selaves Avos is da'araisa, in other words, if the children, the minor children, have a Torah obligation to eat, and according to the Ran, register over the Karban Pesach, so in other words, it's too late. The Karban Pesach has already been shechted. And the registration is only up to Shechita. You cannot register after Shechita. So, El Alam
Elohu, the Amr. They just have to read it that morning.
You're allowed to register and unregister up to the point of Shechita. That's the Gemara Pesachim teaches us. So the Gemara says, So good. So meaning, this has nothing to do with registration. This has nothing to do with, according to Tosfos, eating the Karban Pesach. So why? What is Dad doing? He's just motivating the kids. That's all. He's just getting them excited about the Karban Pesach. So, just as another point of evidence, the Braisa says that there was a race once upon a time. The girls ran faster than the boys, and it turns out that the girls were as a result, right? Grammatically correct. The girls were more; they were quicker. They were more excited, and it kind of comes. It came out that the sons in that year they were shvelim. And the Ran points out over here. All you see from over here is the Braisa doesn't say that the girls actually acquired the Karban Pesach and the boys didn't acquire the Karban Pesach. It just simply means the girls that year were faster. That's all. But in terms of the obligation to eat, or according to the Ran, register over the Karban Pesach, it simply doesn't apply to minors. So once again, to the question of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan made this rule that when it comes to Mechusri Kapar, you don't eat Das. Why? Because when it comes to Zav and Zava and Mitzora, you bring these karbanos on behalf of your minor children. So you see that you don't eat Das. The Gemara says, what about, let's just quickly run through the 2 points the Gemara just made. So what about a Chatas, a generic Chatas? Gemara says, no, there's never a scenario where you're bringing a Karban Chatas on behalf of somebody else. What about a man's deranged wife? Is a mentally incompetent wife? There's never a scenario where he's going to bring a Karban Chatas on our behalf. So that's not a valid argument. What about the Karban Pesach? Aren't you bringing your Karban Pesach on behalf of your children? And the Gemara to that also says, no, you're not. You're not bringing your Karban Pesach on behalf of your minor children. They're going to join you. They're going to eat the Karban Pesach together with you, but that's not Daraisa. That's not a din Daraisa. Okay, so basically when all said and done, Mechusrei Kapara does not require Das, like Rav Yochanan says. All other Kabanos do require Das. Okay, so two big questions that we've asked so far today. Number one, are the Kohanim the Shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the Shlichim of the owner of the animal? Our Gemara does not arrive at a conclusion, although the Gemara in Kedushin says they're the Shlich of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Second big question of the day, in a world of Karbanos, do I need Das? Do I need consent of the owner? And the answer of the Gemara basically says is yes. You need consent of the owner, the exception to that rule being Mechusrei Kapara, but otherwise you do need consent. Torim is Trumosaf. We turn now to Lamed Vav Amid Beis, and now we begin our next big discussion of the day. And that is as follows. Our Mishnah says that if, again, I have a Madir and a Mudar, right? The Mudar is the one who is not allowed to provide benefit for the Madir. And, sorry, I mixed it up once again. The Madir, the Madir is the one who's not allowed to provide benefit for the Mudar. And now the Mishnah says one of the things that he can do is he can take off my Truma. He can take off my Truma. To which the Gemara now asks a very simple question. We're on the very top. Alamed Vav Amud Beis. Ibailu. Hatar Mishalal Shel Chaver Tzarech Da'ato Olo. Let's say as follows. Okay, so I know we don't live in Eretz Yisrael. We don't take off Trumas and Maestros. But imagine for a moment that we did. And Danny, you had Trumas and Maestros. Sorry. You just harvested. And now the question the Gemara is asking is as follows. I'm going to go into your property and I'll take off Trumas and Maestros. Do I need your approval? Okay. Stepping foot on your property already is one issue, but let's just assume what's what we call drisus arego. But let's assume that's fine. Can I take off trumas and maestros? So mi amrina kem deschusu lo lo tzarech das. So on one hand, I'm doing you a benefit, meaning zach la'adam, meaning I'm going to now take off trumas and maestros off of your produce, and that means that all the rest of your food now is going to be corrected and acceptable to eat. Prior to me taking off Trumas and Maestros, all the food is prohibited. It's called Tevel. And so therefore, I'm doing you a service. On the other hand, Danny, what I'm also doing is I'm taking away your mitzvah. You have a mitzvah in the Torah to take off Trumas and Maestros. And so by me stepping in and taking off Trumas and Maestros, I am now I'm taking away your opportunity to do a mitzvah. And that's your produce and that's your money. And wouldn't you prefer to do the mitzvah rather than me do the mitzvah? So the Gemara now is opening this as a question. Tashma. So the Gemara says, well, let's take a look at our Mishnah. Tarim mishchumas of esmasos al dadato. So let's look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that, again, we have two people. One is bound by a neder that he's not allowed to provide benefit for the other. Okay, let's call him Shimon, just to make hopefully everything clearer. So Shimon cannot provide benefit for Reuven. Reuven owns produce. So our Mishnah says Shimon can take off Trumos on Reuven's produce. So, lidato b'mayaskina. Now the Gemara says, now let's think this through. Ilem min bal hakri, al shal bal hakri lidato, diman. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. Are we talking about where Shimon's coming into Reuven's property, taking off Trumos and Maestros, using Reuven's produce, and then the Mishnah says ledato, with consent? What does that mean? Ilem ledato delay manshav yishliach. So the Gemara says, is he doing it based on his own consent? Well, no one asked him to do it. Ela dato de balakri. So the Gemara says it must be that he's doing it with the consent of the owner. Meaning Reuven must have said to him, yeah, sure, take off Trumos and Maestros on my behalf. So hakamahani le dekavish lichusei. The Gemara says all that can't be. Because again, the starting point of our Mishnah is that Shimon is not allowed to provide benefit for Reuven because a neder was constructed. And Shimon is now prohibited to provide hana. So Reuven can't say to him, Shimon, do me a favor. Could you take off Trumos and Maestros off of my produce? You can't do that. That's hana. Ela mishalo al shalakri. So the Gemara says that it must be that the case is that what Shimon did is he took off Trumos and Maestros from his own produce in order to correct, in order to be misakein the produce of Reuven. Uladato daman. So the Gemara says, now again, using whose consent? Ilim ledato de balakri hakamahanile. Now, did Reuven give the okay? Well, if Reuven gave the okay, so then Shimon is providing a benefit for Reuven. Elalav ledate de nafshe umishalo tareim al shachavero. So it must be that without approval. So again, right now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that Reuven is the owner of the field and the owner of the produce. Shimon's coming along. Shimon's taking his own produce, and with his own produce, taking Trumos and Maestros off of the produce of Reuven. So in other words, let's say Reuven has 100 bushels of grapes, and so now Shimon, with his own grapes, now will take off 2% to give to the Kohen. In other words, of his own grapes, take 2%, give it to the Kohen, the next 10%, give it to the Levium, another 10% is Maestro Sheni. He'll use his own grapes in order to take off Trumos and Maestros off of Reuven. Now, to which the Gemara, and it can't be that Reuven's giving the approval, because if Reuven's giving the approval, so then you're in violation of the Neder. So it must be that Shimon's doing it all on his own. Now, how is this not a violation of the Neder? Meaning, think of what Shimon is doing for Reuven. Basically, he's saving Reuven all that money. Okay, good. So the Ran also is bothered by this, and the Ran says a couple of suggestions. Number one, the Ran says that maybe our Mishnah is going. This argument of the Gemara right now is following the viewpoint of Hanan. We know that Hanan says that if all I'm doing is getting right, chasing away the lion, so Hanan is of the opinion that's not considered a benefit. All right, good. That's the correct. It's an indirect benefit.
It's actually taking the mitzvah away from the
guy. Okay, right. Oh, that's an excellent point. Just one second. Or the Ran suggests another possibility is, well, I'll tell you what. Let's leave it at that for now. Okay, so vi amar. Let's go back to our Gemara now. Let's finish the point the Gemara is trying to make. Vi amar tzarech das hakamahanilei. So now, if Shimon can do this on his own without the approval of Reuven, I get it. Meaning, so then I understand so then we have a wonderful proof that Shimon can take off Trumos and Maestros off of Reuven's produce, and he doesn't need consent. So it must be that you don't need consent in order to do that. Because if by definition Shimon needed consent in order to do that, So then our Mishnah doesn't make any sense, because our Mishnah says that Shimon can do this on behalf of Reuven. The only way that could work is if Shimon could do this without needing the consent of Reuven. Once he needs the consent of Reuven, so then he's providing a hana for Reuven. So the Gemara says, "La'ola misha balakri, abalakri." So the Gemara says, "No, maybe the case over here is where the Trumas and Maisos were taken off from Reuven's produce onto Reuven's produce. Now, how can it now be that Shimon can come in and do that? Meaning, again, Shimon can only do that as an agent." How can Shimon do that? Again, Shimon let's go back to Shimon. Shimon is usher to provide hana for Reuven. So So the Gemara says, well, what Reuven said is as follows. Reuven woke up in the morning and says, look, anyone who wants to has my permission to go in and take off trumas off of my produce. Meaning, he is not expressly saying to Shimon, I want you to do me a favor. Reuven's just allowing permission granted to anyone who wants to come in and take off trumas and maisos. Shimon comes in and does so. He's not doing it for Reuven per se. He's doing it because Reuven gave express permission in order for anyone to do so. Okay, Ad Kan. Let's stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Let's just quickly recap. Three big issues that we discussed today. Issue number one, the Gemara didn't arrive at a conclusion, and that is that when the Kohanim are doing their avoda, they're acting on behalf of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, or the other possibilities, they're acting on behalf of the owner of the animal. Our Gemara does not arrive at a conclusion. The Gemara in Kedushin says they're acting as the shlich of Hashem. Second big issue that we discussed today is that when I bring a carbon on behalf of somebody else, do I need his consent? The Gemara says the answer is almost always yes, you do. You need das of the owner. The only exception to the rule is going to be mechusrei kapara, as we learned back in our Mishnah. And because I don't need consent by mechusrei kapara, so therefore, if the kohen is bound by a neder that he can't provide benefit for that other person, he can bring the karbanos to mechusrei kapara because you don't need consent. And finally, the last big issue that we discussed today is being turing truma. One of the things that we learn in the Mishnah is that the owner of the car, somebody can come into somebody else's field and take off trumas and maisos off of that owner, even though he's bound by a neder that he can't give him hana. So how can he do that? So the Gemara right now answered that because the owner of the field said, I give permission for anyone to come in and to take trumas and maisos. So now Shimon is not doing him a specific favor. He just simply was given permission, but anyone was given permission to come in and take off trumas and maisos. That right now is what the Gemara says is the case in our Mishnah.